Chapter 6. The Return. The large clay tablet took Vinitha and Georgia a couple happy hours to finish. Following Uncle Louis's recommendations, they made it just the right size, and Vinitha carefully wrote the two rules while the clay was still soft. Just as Georgia was finishing the decorative borders, Santa spotted Evan at the common room window. "It's Evan again!" Santa rejoiced, jumping up from the table. Almost all the tinies crowded over, happy to see Evan for the second time. As usual, the tall blonde researcher stooped over in the same uncomfortable position to speak into the microphone. "I have good news, everyone," he told them. "The professor and I have finished restoring paradise." Everyone went wild with joy. Santa hollered loudly and began a wiggle dance. There was so much clapping and shouting that no one could hear Evan speak. He tapped on the glass and held up his hand. "Evan has something more to say," Uncle Louis shouted. Everyone stopped celebrating and listened. "The professor will be opening the doors very soon. Get anything you need and be ready to go." There were shouts of joy. "Can I bring the catapult?" Odin called out above the cheers. "No," Evan shook his head. "Anything made with building blocks has to stay here in the nursery." Several disappointed responses were heard. But then a noise from behind startled everyone. The doors were beginning to open. Bright rays spilled in at the top of the long, dark tunnel. The floor ramp lit up with small twinkling lights to guide their way. There was a mad rush as the teenagers hurried to grab blankets and crafts. Kenzie, Charlie, and Fahid, the farmer boys, ran to the animal nursery to open all the screen doors. They brought out the chicks and pails. "Let the animals go first," Uncle Louis called out as the older deer and Brownie the cow came rushing through and headed up towards paradise. "Once we've helped all the animals out, you can follow them in, but don't rush. We don't want anyone to get knocked down and trampled." With great excitement, Amy stood in the hallway, watching Freddo and Ripple race up the tunnel. The lambs and calf came out tentatively as Tina prodded them from behind. Colors, sky, and flash alighted on their owners. The little birds weren't sure what was happening or where to go. Zaheer whistled, and the squirrels came bounding over to him and ran up his legs. Chattering to each other, they perched on his head and arms. Finally, the day had come, the day of their return. Once all the smaller pets had been collected and the nervous birds and animals herded out, Uncle Louis allowed the rest of the tinies to follow. They walked as fast as they could up toward the light, trying to avoid a few messy blobs the animals had deposited on the ramp.
"I love today,"
a deep voice sang out cheerfully as they reached the top of the steep incline.
"We're going away to play all day by the refurbished bay."
Amy laughed, looking over at Zaheer, who smiled warmly back at her. The bright light from the open doors shone in on both of them. Zaheer's face was changing every day. His nose was becoming more prominent, and wispy facial hair was growing in. Many of the young men were now growing facial hair. And during the 3 weeks in the nursery, every girl had become a young woman, even Lily. Merrily, Amy sang the childish song with Zaheer, while her little lorikeet bobbed up and down on her shoulder, adding in a few shrill notes. Almost everyone was giddy and lighthearted. Several of the tinies sang along, but Odin and Franz yelled out for them to stop.
"Fresh bread and mango trees,"
Zaheer sang louder, clapping the rhythm on his leg.
"We'll keep singing till you're on your knees. Today's the day we are going home. It makes me want to write a poem."
Santa, Kenzie, and Lima kept the beat with Zaheer and Amy, adding in their own background melody. Coming through the doors, Amy marveled at the beauty of a restored world. Flapping his newly developed wings, colors flitted to a nearby tree.
"Oh, it's wonderful to be back at home,"
Amy sang out. Crouching down, she felt the soft green grass and picked up a pink flower. Raising her arms up to the sky, she allowed the sun's rays to warm her skin. Suddenly, the little fawn beside her licked her face.
"Yuck," she cried out, wiping the slobber off.
"Whoa, look at your house," Zaheer said, pointing. The squirrels ran down his legs to explore the orchard. Cries of excitement were going up all around as the tinies saw their new homes and began to rush forward to explore. On the top of Rainbow Hill sat a beautiful log home with a peaked roof, many windows, side decks, and verandas. "Our mansion!" Amy exclaimed, looking wildly around at all the new homes.
How did our house get to look like that? All the houses had been upgraded to log homes. Only the school, the store, and the outhouse had been reconstructed from wooden building boards. But even so, they looked much stronger. As before, the school maintained the open concept with no walls, only pillars holding up a roof over the deck, and three stair benches running around the outside. Stairs had always been a comfortable place to sit and listen to Uncle Louie teach. Charlie was already opening the door in his ranch-style home, which stood very close to the tunnel. Kenzie and Vanitha were right behind him. "I'll race you to Rainbow Hill," Georgia said to Sahir. Excitement shone in her pretty green eyes. "You don't have a chance," Sahir taunted. Georgia started running in a straight line toward the hill. All her long blonde hair streamed behind her in waves. After a moment's hesitation, Sahir ran after her. Lily followed. There was so much to see, Amy wasn't sure where to go first. Zilly, Zoe, and Zeddy bumped up against her, still tentative to investigate the new world. She watched her friends race to Rainbow Hill. Zahir overtook Georgia quickly, but slowed down when he reached the path, waiting for the girls to catch up. Most of the tinies dashed off to explore the new homes. Amy was left alone with the deer. Chapter 7. Lots of surprises. "I'm going to show you where to get a drink and take you to the forest," Amy said, patting the young fawns affectionately. "Come with me." Running ahead and coaxing the fawns to follow, Amy ran over the rebuilt bridge. The beach boys were already swimming in the lake, longing to be close to the water and look out over the vast, sparkling blue expanse once again. Amy chose to follow the shoreline. The young loons were happily bobbing on the surface while the ducks were upside down fishing for food. In a few places along the beach, the sand was dirty and stained, a sad reminder of what had occurred 3 weeks earlier. Looking at the hazy sky, Amy wondered if Evan and the professor were watching on the other side. Just in case, she smiled and waved. "Thank you," she called out loudly. Damien heard her and looked over. "Thanks for what?" he asked. "I'm just thanking the professor and Evan," she relayed. "They made our world beautiful again." Laughing, Damien dove under the water. Amy continued along the sandy beach. For the most part, she was amazed by how well paradise had been fixed up. Under the leafy eucalyptus trees that lined the beach, she saw three substantial hammocks hanging in their usual place, but much bigger than before. The well-worn path to Rainbow Hill that used to lead up from the sand was no longer visible along the beach. Several familiar trees were missing as well, but the fawns were enchanted with the forest that still remained. Racing in, they nibbled at the fresh green leaves with delight. Zilly rubbed eagerly against the curling loose bark of the trees. Zeddy kicked up his heels. "Just a bit further, Zoe," Amy called out. Her long copper-brown braids bounced against her back as she ran up the hill, forging a new path. There were many long sections of dirt where grass was attempting to resprout, and there were a few new open places where trees had once stood. When she reached the grassy top of the hill, Amy turned to look at the view. The clearing on Rainbow Hill was truly her favorite spot in all of paradise. From this height, she could see the sparkling lake, the replanted orchards, all the new homes and the store. "Professor and Evan did such a fantastic job," she thought to herself with a pleased expression. She remembered how scarred and dirty the landscape had looked after the flood. Now the hills, meadows, and farmland were almost completely restored, and the houses made it better than ever. "Thank you," she called out again loudly. "I love my new house." Zoe had followed her to the top of the hill. The other fawns trailed behind. "This is your forest now," Amy told her pets. One of the older deer poked his head out from behind a tree. "Oh, look, there's your uncle," she laughed. Out of the corner of her eye and through the distant trees, Amy saw Zahir heading to his new house alone. His head was down, and he was walking slowly. She had never seen Zahir look so sad. For a moment, she wondered if something was wrong. But then Zoe nudged her arm and stole her attention. Turning around, she saw Zeddy race by, and then all three fawns began chasing each other around the yard. The older deer bent down and began eating the grass. Amy could hear squeals and shouts from inside her house. It took a few tries to figure out how to use the new door handle,
but when the large door swung open, she stood still for a moment, astonished and unable to speak. The kitchen looked nicer than the kitchen at the store. Unfortunately, when she tried the taps over the sink, she discovered that water didn't flow out like it did at the store, nor could she open the oven door or turn on the heat. The fridge was a shiny silver color, matching the oven perfectly, but both were sealed shut. There were all kinds of cupboards with handles, but she soon realized that everything was fake. "Oh, well," Amy said happily to herself, "it will be fun to pretend we have a kitchen, and I love all the pretty windows." With so many large open windows, all the rooms were bright and airy, sporting great views of the scenery below. She walked into the living room and was pleased to see her pink and white couch sitting on the shiny wooden floor. Plenty of noise was coming from above as Georgia, Santa, and Lily ran from room to room, raving over the slanted ceilings and padded window seats. A spiraling wooden staircase reached up to the floor above, and Amy ran up to see what surprises awaited her. 5 cozy bedrooms were upstairs. Each one had soft furry rugs on the floor, and all their beds had new white blankets and pillows. "Which room do you want?" Georgia asked as she followed Amy from door to door. "Aren't they just so perfect?" All the rooms had their own special features, but one had an especially good view of the lake through floor-to-ceiling windows. "You want this room, don't you?" Georgia asked, observing Amy's long look out the window. "I told everyone you'd want this one because you love to watch the lake, or at least the action on the lake." "This room is too bright for me," Lily admitted. "I like cozy dark bedrooms so I can sleep in." "I like small, snuggly rooms," Santa relayed. "This one is too big." Amy was an early riser and she loved the view. A wooden bench-like structure ran along the entire width of the window and would be a perfect place to sit and watch the sunrise. Ecstatic, she turned around with her hands pressed together and begged to have it. "It's yours," they all agreed. "Come look at this," Santa said, with a smile on her dark face and a gleam in her pretty brown eyes. She motioned for Amy to follow her through a door on the far wall. "You have a little room where nothing works," she explained. "There's one here and one down the hall." Lily followed behind with her hands on her hips. "It has a sink like the one in the kitchen at the store, only a lot prettier," she relayed, "but there's no water." The puzzled look on her little freckled face, Lily turned on the taps to demonstrate. "See? Nothing happens." "And look at the tall box in the corner," Santa said, pointing to the one high see-through enclosure. She walked in and began pointing out the taps and the long bar with holes at the top. "It looks like a shower, but it's see-through." The professor had always been very careful with what books he had sent in for the tinies to read. He didn't want them to know too much about the big world and become discontent, so they had never seen the inside of real houses before. One by one, the girls took turns standing inside the clear box, fiddling with the taps and looking up carefully at the stick with holes. To their disappointment, no water came out. The pipe and taps were similar to the showers at the outhouse, only those were in dark, enclosed areas with only a small window above to let in some light. "It's a fake shower," Georgia concluded with a frown. "Why do we have fake showers and sinks in our house?" "This is a funny chair," Amy exclaimed, sitting down on the one white hard chair in the room. Immediately, she stood back up. "It isn't very comfortable," she frowned. "Why would you ever want a chair here? There's no desk or table or even room for one." Georgia asked to try it. She settled down on the hard plastic and tried to lean back against it. "Wow, you're right," she agreed. "It's not comfortable at all. But there is a good view out this window." "Wait," Lily called out, looking down at the chair more carefully. "I think something lifts up." Georgia slid off and Lily prodded the chair. With her hand, she lifted a lid that swung on a hinge. A large hole was underneath. The girls all looked at one another aghast. "Why would anyone want a hole in their chair?" Amy retorted. "You could fall in." Perturbed, Lily called out, "There are holes in the planks of the outhouse." Even the nursery had been equipped with a boys' and girls' outhouse, but the tinies had never seen a toilet. "No way," Amy retorted. "Who would want an outhouse right next to their bedroom?" Everyone looked at Lily with disgust. "Let me try it again," Georgia said. She sat down solemnly and settled in. "It's actually more comfortable without the lid," she relayed. "I like it better this way."
All the girls had to try out the new chair with the lid up. They all agreed they would keep it that way. If they wanted to sit in this strange chair and enjoy the view out the window, it was far more comfortable to sit on the hole. "Come look at our room," Santa begged. "Every room has something special." Amy eagerly followed the other girls, discovering that Santa and Georgia had chosen rooms with personal walkout decks on either side of her huge window. Their windows were smaller, with quaint slanted ceilings and padded window seats. Santa's was the smallest and had only room for one bed. Lily's room was surrounded by trees and therefore dark and cozy, just as she loved. Dia had chosen a large chamber at the back of the house with floor-to-ceiling windows like Amy's, only her room was lined with shelves. All the bedrooms were beautiful in their own way. There was a knock at the door. Running down the stairs gleefully, the girls opened up to find the Beach Boys. "Hey, do you mind if we take a look at your house?" Damien asked eagerly. He had Emma in his arms. Shirtless as usual and wearing only his swimming trunks, Damien's gold chain stood out clearly for all to see. The gold heart dangled next to his puppy's head. "Everyone is raving about their new homes," he continued, "so we're curious to see inside." "Come right in," Amy welcomed warmly. "We'd love to show you around." The girls pointed out the big windows and the beautiful kitchen. When they walked into the living room, the guys immediately noticed a large arch stone structure against the wall. The arch stone surrounded a hole in the wall that began at floor level. As they poked and prodded, they discovered they weren't real stones. "What do you think it's for?" Franz asked. "It's a pet chamber," Damien said right away. "Really?" Amy asked in surprise. Damien put Emma down on the ground and slid her into the hole. Emma fit well, with ample room to spare. "Made just for her," he asserted. "It's probably just missing the front gate. If I were to make a little fence and attach it to the wall, then Emma would have to stay in the hole till I let her out." "But why would you do that?" Amy asked, perplexed. "So that she doesn't make a mess on your floor." "Oh, that makes sense." Amy remembered how much poop scooping had to be done in the animal nursery. "You're a bit slow," Franz derided Amy, shaking back his stringy brown hair. Lima bent down and looked up inside. "There's a big tunnel going right up to the ceiling," he exclaimed. All the young men had to have a look, and then they pondered its usefulness. "I think it's an air vent," Damien considered. "I suppose some pets might need a full cover to block out the light so that they can sleep or whatever. With that tunnel up to the roof, they will always have access to fresh air." Amy and Georgia were quite impressed with Damien's understanding of how the new pet chamber worked. The young ladies showed their visitors around. The Beach Boys marveled at the comfortable house, investigated the spiral staircase, and discussed how they could build one themselves, should they ever change their minds about sleeping outside. Emma had an accident on the floor, and Damien was quick to clean it up. "Sorry, girls," he said. "See what I mean? These are impressive floors, and you don't want them to get wrecked. If I visit here again, I'll bring a little fence to keep Emma in the pet chamber." When the guys were shown Amy's odd room, they had their own theories as to what everything might be. Like the girls, they had to try out the tall glass box, fiddle with the unmoving handles, and look carefully at the stick with tiny holes. "Maybe there was some way to get water to come out of these taps," Damien pondered. Standing in the glass box, Lima marveled, "This is one fancy shower, but why doesn't it work?" "Who needs their own shower?" Franz argued. "The best way to clean yourself is to jump in the lake." "But not everyone is so close to the lake," Damien replied thoughtfully. "It would be rather convenient to have water in your own house, especially when your house is up on a hill. Imagine if you could just turn these taps and water came out. You wouldn't need to run to the lake or the store or the wash basin." "It would be amazing," Amy agreed, looking at the tall box again. "But it's impossible," she laughed. Everyone agreed. Without having ever seen a pump mechanism, the Tinies could not imagine that water could ever flow uphill. Santa pointed out the hard, uncomfortable chair, and the young man debated what it could be. Finally, Damien remarked, "It kind of reminds me of the outhouse design. A lot nicer, of course, but..." "That's what I thought," Lily piped up proudly, folding her arms together. The other girls were completely disgusted. "What?" Georgia called out. "That's revolting. There's no long drop." "Oh, that would be so smelly," Santa giggled. waving her hand in front of her nose and kicking up her feet. Who would want that in their house? Aside from Lily, no one agreed with Damien's suggestion. Franz frowned at his beachmate. Sometimes you're smart and sometimes you're not. At least I'm smart sometimes, Damien retorted. Lima laughed. Emma started barking at a window. When the teens looked out, they saw that Zahir and Fredo were walking past. Speaking to his puppy, Damien said, Hey, there's little Louie and your old friend. He picked up Emma. When she continued to bark, Damien ran down the stairs and out the front door. Everyone else followed. Emma and Fredo had become quite close after 3 weeks in the animal nursery, even if their masters had not. While the dogs frolicked around, Amy asked Zahir about his house. I like it, he said flatly, patting the dogs who were both trying to climb on his lap. Does it have a funny chair with a hole in the middle? She asked him, laughing. It does, he shrugged, keeping his eyes on Fredo and Emma. Rather strange, I'd say. Amy was perplexed with Sahir's lack of enthusiasm. Are you okay? She asked. At that moment, Georgia came running over to Zahir. Can I see your house? She asked. Sure, Zahir said with a smile. As long as you don't mind that I just invited Odin, Ponzi, and Vahid to have a look. Odin? She questioned. Then she shrugged. Whatever. Amy stood still in bewilderment as she watched Zahir and Georgia walk off toward his house without so much as a backward glance. She was dumbfounded that Zahir didn't invite her to join them, but he didn't. Maybe he's disappointed about his place, she thought. Hey, Amy, Damien called out. I love your deck. This is a great spot to hang out and admire paradise. Turning around, Amy joined him on the steps. They couldn't see the view as clearly as they could from the upstairs windows, but through the leafy trees there were glimpses of sparkling water. Straight ahead was the path to the clearing at the top of the hill. In the distance, the orchard girl's house was clearly in sight. Amy longed to investigate. Let's visit everyone's new houses, she suggested eagerly. I wonder if they're all the same. Let's start in the orchard, Damien said. I almost wished I lived in a house. This is fun. All the others agreed, so three young ladies, three young men, and a puppy went racing down the hill. Chapter 8. Gratitude and Schemes. Amy had toured two other new homes when she heard the bell ring for dinner. The dinner bell, Santa sang out, clapping her hands and swaying her hips. I sure hope we're having something other than Wonder Drink. The farmhouse had been the last log home they had walked through, and now their group was down to five. Franz had left them to visit Odin and Ponzi. The three houses had all been different in style. The bigger the house, the more luxurious it was inside. Nothing worked or opened in the kitchens, even though it looked like it should. In all three homes, strange copper-colored pipes hugged the walls in various places, and there was always at least one odd room with the fake sink, the see-through shower, and the same uncomfortable chair. "Smell that bread!" Damien shouted as they approached a store. "I love Nancy's bread!" "Mmm!" Amy called out, twirling around as she savored the aroma. Nancy's bread is back, she laughed. No more will we lack. Wonder Drink is done. Let's go get a bun. Santa joined in with rhythmic dancing motions. She could move her body in ways that amazed Amy. Lima tried her best to imitate. That's it, Santa laughed encouragingly. Loosen up those hips. As his moon medallion bounced against his dark chest, Lima closely followed Santa's lead. He looked over at the blonde surfer. Imagine if we could do this on our surfboards, he panted eagerly. Loving the idea, Damien tried to mimic their moves. Santa can teach us how to dance and we'll teach her how to surf, he called out. How do you do that? Amy remarked enviously. Damien was catching on fast. I don't know, Santa cheered, clapping hands with Lima and Damien. Just don't think about it too much and let it happen. Amy gave it a try, but the moves didn't just happen for her. I'm hungry, she called out, heading toward the store. As they all followed the delicious, wafting smell, Santa observed, the new store is still in building board style. True, Lima replied, but it's been redone. I wonder why some buildings are still the same style and some are different, Amy remarked. No one knew the answer. Walking in to collect their food, Milan's red-haired puppy bounded over. Sit, Rusty, Milan called out. Nancy was getting hot bread out of the oven, and Milan rushed into the side kitchen to help her. Rusty looked up at the newcomers with his big brown beseeching eyes. With a sad little whine, he obeyed his master, even though everything in his eager face longed to greet the tinies who had just walked in. Amy gave him a cuddle. Lily suddenly exclaimed, "We forgot to bring something to trade!" Dia had arrived at the store before them and was already helping herself to a hot bun. She rolled her dark eyes. "Oh, right. Trading again," she sighed. They all turned wide-eyed to one another. After 3 weeks of free Wonder Drink formula, they had forgotten that in paradise, one needed to bring something to trade. "But there's no fruit or vegetables yet," Santa reasoned. "Until things start growing, what can we bring?" "Rocks and fish," Lima replied. "Surfing lessons," Damien laughed. "I'm going to try one of those sometime," Santa boasted, holding out her arms and posing in a surfer position. "Try it with me," Lima encouraged. "I'll take it nice and slow. No pressure, just fun." "Okay," Santa agreed, warming quickly to the idea and clapping her hands together eagerly. "I'll try surfing with you." Amy looked up in surprise to hear that Santa would try surfing. She wondered what Charlie would think. Damien looked over at Amy. "I'll teach you," he offered. "Me?" she gulped, somewhat alarmed. "I don't even know how to swim." "That's part of the lessons," Damien chuckled. "Come on, Amy, you'll love it." Amy didn't commit one way or the other. It would be fun to learn something with Damien, but the thought of being tossed around by huge waves in the deep water frightened her. "Dinner is free tonight," Nancy announced with a smile as she brought the fresh bread out to the counter. "Uncle Louis says everyone will have a week of free dinners before the trading begins." There was a happy celebration on the store deck that evening, even though dinner was just Wonder Drink and bread. The one hot, tender, scrumptious-tasting bun made it a very special meal. The surplus sat in a basket between Nancy and Yu-Yan, and a few individuals were keeping a watchful eye on the supply. Rusty's eyes were the most attentive. He longed to share the bread, but Milan was very strict that his dog would not beg for food until everyone was done eating, and then he would get the leftovers. Lying on the deck with his longing eyes scanning for any crumbs that might bounce his way, Rusty tried hard to restrain himself. Stocky Odin, Skinny Ponzi, and Lanky Franz were late to pick up their dinner from inside the store. With a bun in one hand and a cup in the other, they swaggered over to the store deck. "Wonder Drink again," Odin complained. "Wonder Drink and bread," Ponzi reminded his friend, making a comical expression as he waved his bun in the air. Lily giggled. "How do you like your new house?" Amy asked Odin politely.
"Mine's just a shed," Odin growled, devouring his bread. "And it's in the wrong place. If I figure out a way to move it, I will."
"Mine too," Ponzi nodded. "Mine should be up on top of Cascading Mountain." "Where are they?" Damien asked. Odin pointed to the edge of the forest. Amy and several others got up to have a look. Two small, well-designed cabins stood in clear view of the store. Amy could see they were also in clear view of Uncle Louis's house. With a smile, she considered this was the best place for Odin and Ponzi.
"We just get junky sheds while the rest of you get mansions," Ponzi grumbled, making a face. "Obviously, we aren't the favorites."
"You have really nice cabins, just like Uncle Louis," Damien argued, still looking at their homes.
"Junky shed is more like it," Odin growled. "Hey, all I've got is a bigger hammock," France piped up.
Looking around, Odin grumbled, "Where's more bread? I've had enough Wonder Drink." Pretty petite Yu-Yan was sitting beside the buns. She looked up as everyone resettled on the deck.
"Hey, cutie," Odin said with a forced smile. "Pass me some bread, please."
Amy was surprised to hear Odin say please. Rarely did he use manners. Bringing over the basket of buns, Yu-Yan was not impressed when Odin grabbed her arm and the bread.
"Thanks, cutie," he said gruffly, trying to pull her down beside him. "Hey, why don't you sit with us for dinner?"
Yanking her arm away, Yu-Yan shook her head and rushed back to Nancy.
"Unfriendly girls," Odin mumbled. Sitting on the far edge of the deck, Uncle Louis cleared his throat. "This is as good a time as any to have a discussion on the new homes," he began. While everyone else had been exploring the houses that afternoon, he had spent his time in the cave office connecting with the professor and Evan to make sure the new smartphone was in working order. He had also finished reading another difficult chapter in the professor's book. The information was way over his head. But he was very impressed by the professor's level of intelligence. When he had their attention, Uncle Louis said, "Due to the flooding accident, our old wooden homes became moldy." Odin chuckled. Poncy jabbed him with his elbow. Uncle Louis stood up and continued, "We don't often look around at paradise and realize how much careful planning the professor put into getting our world balanced just right for us to thrive. Our atmosphere is just wet enough to grow food, but not so wet that things become moldy and saturated. The air we breathe is carefully formulated. Any less oxygen and we all would die. Too much oxygen and other things could happen that wouldn't be good. Even the trees in the forests absorb the harmful carbon dioxide we breathe out and release the oxygen back to us. It's all been precisely calculated so that we can live and safely enjoy this beautiful world." Odin made a face as though he was scheming how to disturb those precise calculations. Fredo trotted over to lay his head on Zahir's lap. Emma tried to join her elderly friend, but Damien quickly whisked her away. "The professor could have been angry at us for damaging his precisely balanced world," Uncle Louis continued as the Tinies finished their meal. "He could have made us clean up the mess we created. It would have taken many, many weeks of hard work, and we still wouldn't have been able to fix it up nearly so well as we see it today. Instead, the professor had compassion on us. He repaired the damage and put in these elaborate houses for us to enjoy. We don't deserve any of these amazing gifts." "Yeah, but I only got a shack," Odin mumbled, stuffing the rest of his bun into his mouth. Uncle Louis stayed patient. "For those who put a lot of effort into building their first houses, Evan and the professor gave bigger homes. For those who only put up a small shack, like me, we now have log cabins that are 10 times nicer." Interrupting the speech again, Odin grumbled, "But everyone else has their house in the same place they built it, except for us." "We want to be in the forest, not out in the open," Poncy added. Uncle Louis cocked his head thoughtfully and looked at Odin and Poncy for a moment. "Do you think there might be a reason the professor moved you out into the clearing?" It wasn't easy to activate Odin's conscience. "It's not fair, reason or not. And don't blame me for poor quality materials that can be so easily damaged. Poncy and I were only doing science experiments." "I think Odin and Poncy should have been asked to rebuild everyone's houses," Lima sneered, repeating the suggestion he had made numerous times before. "We sure had to do a lot of work when we made mistakes." Uncle Louis folded his arms across his chest. "I hear what you're saying, Lima. I understand your feelings," he said kindly. "However, everyone here owes much gratitude to Professor and Evan for cleaning up our mistakes. Professor has chosen to give all of us a new start. He is holding no one responsible for the accident." There was a murmur of dismay among many of the Tinies who felt the troublemakers deserved tough consequences for their actions. Odin laughed. "We are all going to overlook this accident," Uncle Louis reiterated. "I don't want to hear any more blame ever. We are going to be thankful that we have a fantastic world once again." Looking over in the Beach Boys' direction, he said, "Aside from poor little Maxie, whom Damien bravely tried to save, and some of the animals that we couldn't capture, no one else lost their life. We now have much better housing than we did before and a restored world. The professor has shown us compassion, and he wants us to show compassion to each other. Let's follow his lead." When Uncle Louis finished his speech, he told them that they were free to go and enjoy their first evening back in paradise. Those with pets collected Wonder Drink and leftover bread to take back to them. "How can we thank the professor?" Santa asked the others. "And Evan," Zahir added. "Maybe we could make a big thank you card and send it to them on the train," Vanitha suggested. "Great idea," Kenzie agreed. "And get everyone to sign it," Amy nodded. "Or do another celebration," Santa smiled, throwing up her arms joyfully. "Yes, that would be a good idea too," Georgie agreed. but that takes a while to plan. Charlie and Vahid liked the celebration idea, only they wanted to wait until the fruits and vegetables were ready.
I'm so glad we didn't have to replant all the fruit trees that were swept away in the flood, Charlie said. Can you imagine how hard it would be to pull those trees out of the lake and drag them back to the orchard?
And dig a big hole for the roots, Vahid added, his dark eyes opening wide as he imagined himself doing the work.
Evan and the professor saved us a lot of trouble. Please make that card, Vanitha.
Kenzie nodded, his gray eyes radiant in his white freckled face. Turning to the dark-skinned artist beside him, he encouraged,
Do one of your beautiful garden paintings, Vanitha, and leave lots of blank space inside. We can each write a message on it saying how much we appreciate the new paradise and our amazing homes.
Blushing a little, Vanitha nodded her assent.
Georgia was a little perturbed that she hadn't been asked to paint the picture and tossed her blonde hair back haughtily.
Having decided who should make the card, most of the Tinies turned their attention to what game they should play. Damien suggested capture the flag, and the majority liked the idea.
Amy, France, and Lemur on my team, called out.
Kenzie volunteered Zaheer to be his team's captain, and eventually everyone was divided into two groups. Using their t-shirts for flags, the two captains hid their markers on the edge of the forest and a noisy game began. However, Odin and Ponzi were uninterested in playing and were completely unmoved by Uncle Louis's speech. Instead, they headed in the opposite direction away from the others toward the North Forest.
I can't believe we don't have to do anything to make up for causing the flood, Odin chuckled, looking in the direction of the hazy sky.
He kept his voice low, but he was right near the new microphone which was attached to the store veranda. One of the reasons the two small cabins had been positioned nearby was that anything the two occupants said in their homes would be heard clearly on the other side of the dome.
In fact, paradise is even better than it was before, the stocky, disgruntled young man boasted.
Ponzi mumbled, except that we have to wait ages for the food to grow.
It'll grow soon enough, Odin growled. I'd say we work on a new experiment and see what other useless materials can be wrecked.
Do you want to be put back in the nursery? Odin turned to his smooth-faced buddy, who was now the only guy without facial hair. There was a gleam in Odin's pale blue eyes, and he tossed his long blonde straggles proudly.
Evan said, his world is a lot bigger than ours. Where do you think the spider came from? Where do you think they took Rosa? Or the chickens? Where do you think Evan and the professor get their food and all the stuff they send in to us?
Yeah, I suppose.
If we cause enough trouble, Odin added mischievously, they may take us out of here and then we'll get to discover their world. I'd risk anything to see it.
Ponzi smiled, his bronze face lit up.
Oh, I see. Not a bad idea. Exploring would be fun.
They punched their fists together in a show of support.
Yes, it would, Odin smirked.
Chapter 9. Countermeasures.
Unbeknown to Odin and Ponzi, their conversation came over the speakers loud and clear.
Can you believe those two? The professor despaired, folding his arms across his chest.
They are full of mischief, no doubt about it, Evan smiled.
We could pull them out of paradise right now and confine them to the nursery for the rest of their lives, the professor considered quietly.
In fact, we were cruel. We could give them exactly what they are asking for. We could let them discover our world.
Distressed by the young man's lack of gratitude, Jax imagined himself agreeing to their foolish desires.
Horrified, he whispered to Evan,
They'd last an hour in the rainforest biome if they were lucky. They could so easily be stepped on without notice or eaten by a snake before they ran out of oxygen. Their lives are entirely in our hands, and yet they think they can control their own destiny.
Evan placed his hand on Jack's shoulder.
You have demonstrated remarkable compassion and forgiveness, he assured his mentor softly, and the majority of the Tinies are planning to make a card and are very appreciative.
They love you even more for all that you've done. With a nod, the professor smiled. You are right, Evan, he acknowledged. We need to keep to our mission, don't we? Yes, we wanted a human experiment, and we have a human experiment that will soon be revealed to the world. Odin and Ponzi keep the experiment, very realistic. I just don't understand what they have to complain about, Jax Lemans vented in a hushed tone as they watched the two young men strut into the North Forest. Paradise is such an amazing place. They have everything to enjoy. They need nothing. Why don't they participate with the others and desire to make their world the best it can be? Why do they dislike me? Why don't they want to please us? Why aren't they happy with what they have? I truly hope that forgiveness and compassion would change their outlook. Evan considered the professor's questions as he absentmindedly watched Damien tackle Zahir and pin him down hard before the dark-haired lad could grab his flag. Perhaps the next time they cause trouble, we should try a different approach. It's all part of our research, right? Like what? The professor asked as they watched Uncle Louis separate the two hostile young men. Explaining his suggestion, Evan said, Well, when Louis insisted that the Beach Boys had to work and create things for the betterment of others, that seemed to turn them around, especially Damien and even Lima. True, the professor agreed, watching Damien race across the meadow, skillfully avoiding all hands that reached out to stop his progress. Suddenly, Santa darted out from behind a tree and tagged him. However, Damien didn't acknowledge he had been tagged and kept running for the flag. Santa yelled out for him to stop, protesting that he had to go into the circle. Evan continued, So, we're learning that forgiveness and compassion may not be effective motivators for everyone. The Beach Boys learned about servant leadership through their work on the road, and that is what we want everyone to learn. Jax pondered the matter as they watched the game. They both heard Zahir's team call out loudly that things were unfair. Damien grabbed the flag and declared his team had won, but angry voices protested. Santa kept loudly proclaiming to everyone that she had tagged him. Uncle Louis stepped forward. Okay, I have an idea, he said. Let's play this game without any rules. Everyone reposition their flags, but this time you don't have to go to the circle if you are tagged, so you don't need a teammate to rescue you, and there will be no boundary line. It's a free-for-all. Maybe it'll be a lot more fun. There was some uncertainty amongst the Tinies as they set up for another game. The two researchers looked on curiously as the teams tried to hide their flags in more secret locations. Damien ran over while Zahir's team was setting up. No fair, Santa called out. You can't watch us while we hide it. There are no rules, Damien argued. We can all do whatever we want. If you were smart, you would have watched us. Santa protested to Uncle Louis, but he stood back, shook his head, and smiled. Zahir pulled his team's flag from the tree, placed it further away on the ground, and shrugged helplessly. Ready, everyone? Uncle Louis called out. The game was over almost as soon as it began. Damien was already on the other team's side, and he raced over, ignoring every tag that came his way. Grabbing the flag, he cheered, We won again! That's no fun, Santa grumbled. That's the dumbest game ever, Lima gripped. Most of the Tinies agreed. Uncle Louis called out to Damien. What do you think? Was that fun for you? Tossing the flag behind him, Damien replied, Let's play a different game. With no rules? Uncle Louis asked. But the rules make it fun, Zahir argued. If there are no rules, we might as well just do running races. It's pointless. Who wants to play with rules? Uncle Louis asked. Everyone wanted the rules, and even Damien reluctantly agreed. A new game ensued. Outside the dome, Evan rushed over to the desk to grab his journal. This is worth recording, he encouraged the professor. Games aren't fun without rules. What does that say for life? Feeling somewhat stymied, Jax Lemans looked over at his assistant with a frown. Slowly, he followed Evan over to the desk and took notes in his own journal. The game was in action when they returned, and everyone was playing fairly. Amy and Lima were rushing through the field of guards to restore their team captain from the circle. Lima was tackled by Santa, and Amy managed to free Damien. Thinking things over, the professor said thoughtfully, I agree with you, Evan.
There may be a place for rules and consequences. The next time Odin and Ponzi step out of line, we will encourage Louis to give them a hard labor project. I'll start thinking of something useful they could do, just in case Louis needs suggestions. He does really well on his own, Evan nodded thoughtfully. But I suppose it's best that we all share responsibility for the Tinies. With a smile, he added, Hopefully you'll have plenty of time to think of something. They continued to watch the game taking place on the edge of the forest. Santa was a fast guard, taking almost everyone that came near her flag. That girl has a lot of spunk, Evan smiled. I'd make sure she was on my team. Oh, la la, I love this whole little family, the professor sighed with deep emotion. I thought I could stay detached, but all of these Tinies are precious in their own way. I do feel like a father. Then I guess I'm an uncle, Evan laughed. Damien was getting close to the flag. It looked like the game was going to be over when suddenly Zaheer dashed across and brought his adversary down fair and square. At the very same time, Kenzie blazed across and ripped Damien's team's flag from the tree. Angry to lose, Damien punched Zaheer, and Zaheer fought back. Running over, Uncle Louis yelled, Stop it, you two! This is just a game! It means nothing! As he separated the fighters, Uncle Louis was perplexed. What is going on? He asked. We won't be able to play games like this if it's going to lead to serious fighting. The two young men glared at each other, but parted company. Zaheer's nose was bleeding, so Uncle Louis told him to lie down and tilt his head up. Georgia ran over to sit beside the injured player, but she pleaded for Tina to wipe the blood as she couldn't bear to look at the mess. Many of the Tinies watched in distress as Tina ran to the store for a cloth and came back to help. Amy stood watching with quiet concern. What's with Zaheer and Damien? Evan asked. I'm not exactly sure, the professor replied, frowning. They are both very competitive. Perhaps they shouldn't be captains on opposing teams. Then he clapped his hands together firmly. I know what all these young men need. What is that? They need weekly private discussions with Louis. They need to vent their feelings and be guided by a kind uncle. Listening, empathy, healing, awareness, persuasion. This is all part of the servant leadership plan. Great idea, Evan agreed. We should have thought of that before. A private weekly session is a wonderful idea. He paused and considered. Actually, I think we should suggest that Louis has private sessions with everyone, guys and girls. We don't want to single anyone out. Such counseling will be helpful for all the Tinies. If we want to develop future servant leaders, everyone needs to learn from the best. Very true, the professor nodded in full agreement, taking out his phone. I'll suggest that Louis sets aside 2 evenings of each week. One regular session can be devoted to Odin and Ponzi, and one can be for individual sessions with everyone else. Damien and Zaheer should be first on the list. Merci. I love the idea, Evan. He messaged Louis right away. Feeling that the professor needed a distraction, the tall assistant decided this was a time to tell him about his new discovery. As soon as his mentor slid the phone back into his coat pocket, Evan said, I want to show you something. I've done some investigation into the sunflower genetics. Oh, have you discovered why the sunflower returned to its natural size? Come and see, Evan urged. Down in the lab, Evan showed him a sequence in the DNA which was supposed to hold the mutation for miniaturization. However, it had been lost and reverted back to its natural state. I've never seen anything like it, he exclaimed. It's highly unusual, almost impossible, yet it occurred. This is highly unusual, the professor agreed, looking carefully at the screen. I'm very curious to discover if we could create the conditions for this to happen again, Evan added excitedly. What if we could find a way to reverse miniaturization? So with your permission, I'd like to experiment using fish eggs. The professor nodded slowly. I'm sure that it's impossible, he mused. But then again, I once would have thought miniaturization was impossible. And those who stop at impossible, Evan smiled, quoting the professor's words to him on numerous occasions, won't make new discoveries. You certainly have my permission, Jax chuckled. Unfertilized fish eggs were easy to find in the biosphere ponds.
Once the parental DNA was removed, the eggs were natural incubators for the new genetic material to be inserted. "What is your hypothesis?" he asked. "What do you intend to do?" "Well, do you remember when we were loading those sunflower plants onto the train that I had to run back for the last one? When it was in my hand, I noticed I had left my phone in the research lab. I ran in to get it and went right past the gamma ray while we were irradiating new seeds for the garden," the professor recalled, stroking his goatee. "But it's not supposed to leak radiation." "But perhaps it is," Evan suggested. "Perhaps just a minute amount is enough to change the DNA code and revert the tiny growth mutation back to the natural state." "Well, try different levels of radiation and see how it goes," the professor nodded skeptically. "I'll be very interested to see if you can repeat the process." Chapter 10. A Flurry of Activity. It didn't take Vanitha long to make a beautiful card for the professor and Evan. She painted a stunning picture of the gardens in bloom, and almost everyone admired her skill. All the young teens wrote thankful messages inside the card, except Odin and Pontsy, who only scribbled their names in an unreadable fashion. Lima, Franz, and Damien wrote a group message saying, "Thank you for the new hammocks," and signed their names below. However, there were many long, detailed expressions of thankfulness inside, and when the card came through on the train, it was a precious keepsake to both researchers. Amy had written a lovely poem about her lorikeet colors, and also a detailed list of all the things she was thankful for in the magnificent mansion. Georgia had drawn a picture of her favorite flower, which was almost as impressive as Vanitha's artwork on the outside of the card. Kenzie raved about his new sheep and the vastly improved farmhouse. Zahir thanked them for restocking the delicious fish, piling the dead trees in a convenient place to reuse, giving him his beloved dog, Fredo, and all the beautiful sunrises. Charlie and Santa thanked them profusely for restoring the orchards and the gardens and creating the new farm animals. Santa also thanked them for the wonderful, fun waves that came in after lunch, since she was now taking surfing lessons. And there were many other touching expressions of gratitude. When the professor and Evan read the card, they were moved to tears. One runaway teardrop actually fell in the comments, blurring the group, "Thank you." "This card must go on display," the professor smiled gratefully, wiping his eyes. "What a wonderful testimony to so many precious hearts in paradise. How I love these tinies." Evan grabbed a tissue and blew his nose. He nodded, realizing that they were both developing some very strong attachments. With a sigh, he privately pondered that their lives were never going to be quite the same. "Put it in the viewing hall," the professor suggested. "It's proof that these tinies are very appreciative of the beautiful world we made for them and are very happy to live in it." Evan attached the card to a prominent place in the viewing hall, right above the display of building board houses. Since the cleanup was already done and everyone had amazing new homes, paradise entered a lull of organized activity. Uncle Louis still ran morning school lessons with a new focus on biology. He wanted the tinies to understand how living things function, including their own bodies. However, with afternoons free from study, the occasional "I'm bored" statement could be heard in paradise. But in those bored moments, some of the tinies who weren't involved with farming began to work on specialized trading opportunities. Georgia and Vanitha decided they needed a little building dedicated to haircutting, crafts, and bookmaking, so Zahir and Kenzie eagerly set to work to build them a shop for their creative ventures. The young men raided the pile of discarded dead trees that the professor and Evan had left to decompose in the forest. With a sharp saw that Uncle Louis allowed them to use, some nails and a hammer, the creative workshop soon became the most unique building in paradise. Gnarled tree branches held up a veranda roof. The windows weren't perfectly rectangular, but shaped according to the sawed-off limbs the young men had used. The pointy triangular roofs were covered with thin, round sections of tree, giving it a scalloped appearance. The doors had arch trim, and not once was the glue gun needed.
While they worked on the shop, the boys had all their meals accounted for. However, Zaheer still fished before breakfast because no one else would go without him, and Zaheer loved fried fish. Inside the shop, Georgia set up a large desk to work on her second book, The Day We Saw the Rainbow. Her first manuscript was carefully stored in a deep, narrow bookshelf in the wall of the workshop. Uncle Louis granted that the time which Georgia spent making records of their adventures could be used for trade in the store. Yu Yan set up a necklace studio for the gorgeous jewelry she was making from all the pretty beads the Tinies had collected and brought in for trades. Those that didn't have gold chains eagerly desired Yu Yan's colorful beaded necklaces strung on string. Dia had already traded for 3. Georgia and Vanitha had put in their orders. With Kenzie's help, Vanitha set up a table and shelf to make and display her painted pottery. She had all sizes and shapes available. In those first few weeks, the shop owners also gave Tina permission to set up a nail-filing sandpaper block, and soon everyone was raving about the benefits of manicures. Tina was also giving space to store a first aid kit on one of the shelves to use for anyone who was injured, as there were often minor scrapes and cuts in the farmland and the North Forest. Amy would have liked to help out at the new shop, but she was busy in the kitchen every day. Often the pet birds gathered on the windowsill and begged for birdseed pellets and scraps, which she would scatter out the window for them. A colorful cookbook had come in on the train, and Nancy had propped it up against the wall near the stove. It had exciting ideas for salads, vegetable dinners, and ways to use eggs and fish. Along with the cookbook, the professor sent in bottles of spices and herbs, which Milan had neatly arranged on a shelf in the kitchen. Coconut milk came in once a week, and a few unique oils and flavorings were stored under the counter. Amy's kitchen duties had begun simply with the intent of making delicious food to give to the Beach Boys, but she soon realized that Nancy and Milan needed a third person to prepare the big meals. Breakfast was generally rather chaotic. Everyone wanted their bread and scrambled eggs to be hot, and Zaheer and his friends usually arrived with fish fillets that needed to be fried, just as other Tinies were arriving to trade and pick up their food. Often trades were brought in the morning to cover all 3 meals for the day. It was a confusing time. So while Milan and Nancy dealt with the trades, Amy looked after the eggs and fish. The copper-haired Tiny truly felt she was an integral part of the store management, and she liked to be needed. Dia took an interest in redesigning and fitting everyone's clothes. Seeing this, the professor began sending in material, thread, and other supplies for sewing. Soon everyone wanted clothes from Dia, and she happily took custom orders. Her bedroom shelves became filled with bolts of material, hanging garments, and jars of pretty sequins, beads, and gems, which she often used to decorate the garments or to trade for more of Yu Yan's jewelry. Dia loved things that sparkled and shined. Anyone who wanted new clothes had to bring her beads or gems, and everyone wanted new clothes. Paradise fashion quickly became, according to Dia, and ribbons were no longer in style. Dia's clothing was functional and close-fitting, and much more popular with the young men than the ribbon-decorated fairy petal clothing had been. Most of the guys insisted on plain, non-sparkling t-shirts and shorts, with the exception of Lima. Lima loved bright colors with a flourish of sequins, and he didn't care if he was the only guy that did. For those who brought double the trade items, Dia loved to create fancy dresses or outfits. Bright colors, sparkly sequins, and beaded trim were very popular among the girls. The Beach Boys continued surfing and hosting weekly shows, which brought in lots of food items and tickets for meals. Dia had made them simple shorts with ties to ensure they stayed on in the water. Surfing lessons were not so popular, even though invitations were generously given out. The skill came so naturally to Damien, Franz, and Lima that they didn't always have the patience or kind words required to encourage those that still found it difficult to put their heads in the water. Almost everyone had enough tickets for a whole month of surfing lessons, and Dia had flatly refused to accept any more. Santa was the only one who had persisted, leaving her gardening duties once a day to take a lesson with Lima. Charlie thought it was an absolute waste of time. Amy was generally busy preparing meals when swimming lessons were occurring, but even if she had been free, her fear of surfing in the deep water kept her from attempting to learn in the shallow. Since the fatal accident, Amy had become quite cautious of taking risks. Uncle Louis and Vahid set to work building a stand to hold all the books under the roof of the school building. Every week, new books came in from the professor, and they needed a way to keep them organized. They also constructed a book rest to hold the heavy books, so that everyone could see the pages when Uncle Louis was teaching. The farmers were busy with collecting eggs, cleaning stalls, providing the animals with food and water, or working in the gardens. They even put together a new chicken shed. So for many, the afternoons became industrious working time, and in 3 weeks, much was accomplished. However, regardless of the varied activities during the day, everyone considered the evenings to be the time for fun. Many of the teens had finished growing and no longer required so much sleep. The light was lasting longer and longer every evening after dinner. Not all were aware that this happened every year after the winter solstice, but they were enjoying the change. For some, the evenings became time to cool off in the calm lake, or talk on the pier, or play games that Uncle Louis taught them, like capture the flag, hide and seek, or storm the lantern. Often the dogs joined in on the games, but never the cats, rarely the birds. Frequently, Amy found herself on Damien's team with Fran, Santa, Charlie, and Lima, and generally Georgia was on Zaheer's. Occasionally, the competition became too intense, and Uncle Louis had to step in and referee. The weekly evening sessions with Uncle Louis were going well, and most eagerly anticipated their turn for a personal discussion. During those creative 3 weeks, Zaheer, Damien, and Franz each had opportunity to spend some precious individual time with him. Odin and Pontsy were also given regular sessions, but sadly viewed them as a punishment.